Okay. So this is Ned Walthall, and through some accident of fate, the first 15 minutes or so of my presentation wasn't recorded. So let me just tell you what I talked. I talked a little bit about the history of my Grand Central terminal photography, and I talked about the first period, which was where I mostly photographed people in the getting information at the kiosk. And then when I moved to art school, I began to photograph people a little differently where they were not around the kiosk. And you can sort of pick up the narrative from there. Hope you enjoy the rest of the recording. Thanks a lot.
I had to figure out when the light actually appears in Grand Central, because on some days it doesn't. I mean, the first thing I discovered was clouds, right? I went there, I would sit around and walk around and say, wait, where's the light? Well, it was 80% cloud cover. Right. And then I would go and I would discover that, in fact, the sun isn't always there, because it's like Stonehenge, right? Whether the sun leaks in from the buildings around by banging off of, reflecting off of the glass in the skyscrapers, right? And so the sun comes in and boom, 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 boom. And then that depends on exactly the angle of the sun, called the zenith angle, and something called its azimuth. You know, George Boyd knows all about this. He's so proud of me because I figured this out. It's like, you know, so you have to know exactly, you have to figure out when that is, and you can predict when that is, and when those two values are in a certain range, then you know the light will be there. But the light is often not there. It's not there in December. It's not there in January. It's not there in June, you know. And so I would go in June, and I would go in January, and I would stand around, and I would sort of waiting for the light. It's like, you know, it's like the Gospel of John, you know, when is the light going to triumph here, you know? And so I wasted a lot of time. Then I also had to figure out how to kind of optimize my camera for this kind of photography. There are certain settings that you have to use in order to get this. You know, it's like, basically, it doesn't just happen. You can't do this with your iPhone. Your iPhone's going to want to light up everything, right? And so, so you have to manage exposure in a certain way. And, you know, and I had to learn how to do that so that I could do it more consistently. Sometimes I could get away with having the wrong settings and handle it in post-processing, but ultimately I needed to get to the point where I could get it pretty close to where I needed it to be initially. And then I had to learn how to post-process them. I had to learn better how to use the tools I use after I've shot a photograph, you know, things like Lightroom and Photoshop and all that stuff. These are not heavily edited, but they are edited. And so I had to figure out how to do that. And all of that took me about 2 years. And all of this work is actually pretty recent. This is all work I did last year. And so you get the idea. And so that was, some of this is new, some of this is hanging in there. And if you, there's a QR code. If you know how to use a QR code, if you just whip out your phone and try to take a picture of that little code there, it will take you to a website that really has a large kind of historical summary of this work that goes all the way back to maybe 2015. So you can look at that work there. And that's sort of the Grand Central project. Now you can, yeah. No, I don't use a tray. You cannot. Oh, yeah, it's all handheld. Super fast shutter. I mean,
You can't. It's not. They won't let you use tripods in Grand Central because it disrupts the flow of traffic. And there's no way you could use a tripod for this. I mean, because you got to move. They're moving, and I got to move, and that sort of thing. So that's sort of that. Now I'm going to shift to talk about. Who's my neighbor, and how, who is my neighbor, which is the title of that work over there, of that exhibit over there, how that sort of works. So I've noticed something that seems odd to me about our entire approach to who is my neighbor during Lent, okay? The theme for Lent is, who's my neighbor? The theme for small groups is, who's my neighbor? The title on the small group guide, I think, Carol, is Who's My Neighbor, right? Yeah, right. Okay. The title of my show is Who's My Neighbor, right? It's not which among the three was a neighbor to the man fallen upon by robbers, right? That would be hard. I mean, that would be a mouthful, right? Dave is preaching on which among the three was a neighbor to the man who was fallen upon by robbers. Ned's going to talk about, you know, is going to have a show entitled Which Among the Three? you get the idea, right? So you can sort of see why. But what's strange about all this, right, is how quickly we dump that question like a hot potato, right? Who's my neighbor? No! It's the baddie lawyer who asked that. He's trying to trick Jesus. It's completely invalid. We're not going to talk about that question. We're going to move on to the second question. Who among the three was a neighbor to the man who was done upon by robbers, right? 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 So, I mean, you know, in a sermon, I think, which is maybe the best I've heard on the Good Samaritan, I don't think David even mentions the first question, right? He doesn't need to, because Luke makes it easy for us. The lawyer is a baddie. He wants to test Jesus. He tests Jesus. He says, who's my neighbor, to vindicate himself? The question is a trap. Jesus answers it with a parable. The Good Samaritan ends with a question that we all want to talk about, which is, which among the three, you know, was a neighbor to the man in the ditch? It's a better way. That's the way Dave talks about it. That's a better way to talk about it. Shorter. And of course, as Dave also said in his sermon, you know, everybody and his uncle knows the answer to the second question. Which among the three? It's the Samaritan, right? But I think everybody and his uncle is afraid of the first question. I think everybody and his uncle doesn't know the answer to the first question. Right? I mean, if the answer to the first question is everyone, right? You end up trying to feed 5,000 with five loaves and two fish and no Jesus to perform a miracle, right? If the answer to who is my neighbor is not everyone, it can't be everyone, there are too many everyones, right? Then it's left to you or someone you delegate to decide who's going to go hungry tonight, right? It's a tough question. There's an irony here, I think, in the title of my exhibition, which is also Who's My Neighbor, and it's staying Who's My Neighbor. You're going to walk around in there, and you're going to say to yourself, oh, I get it, Ned. You mean everyone. You're going to walk around in there, and you're going to see all these different people, and you're going to say, everyone is my neighbor. That is the message here. That would be an egregious misinterpretation of the exhibit. There are only 26 people in there. I could have those 26 people over for dinner tonight. I could buy them. I could buy 12 pizzas at Wegmans and take care of those 26 people, right? Let me give you an example, sort of how this works. I have some pictures here. Okay. You know what I hate doing more than anything in the world? Curating my own work. I hate curating my own work. I can see some of you nodding. It's like editing your own work. It's like, you know, choosing which of the five greatest essays you ever wrote. It's like some of you are artists. I can see you hate. You know, I was curating some work. I was curating some work basically in last fall, and my wisdom tooth got infected, and I had an emergency appointment with an oral surgeon in the afternoon, and I sat there in the chair, and I said, you know, I'm enjoying this more than curating my own work, you know. I said, I think it might have been the nitrous oxide, but, you know, we're gonna try this, okay? So I have 26 pictures over there, right? But maybe I got it wrong, right? Maybe I got it wrong. So you can help me. Maybe I should use this one, right? I could exclude it, or I could include it, right? So you could, but I'm going to do it this way. Okay. So my circus, my monkeys. Okay. So here's the thing. Right? If you say I should have included this one, All right, good, because it means I have to take one of those down, right? So you know what this is like? This is like neighbor or not neighbor, right? Does he go in or does he stay out? How about this one? How about this one? Neighbor or not neighbor? Okay, who's coming down? But I'm sympathetic. Neighbor or not neighbor? Brutal, brutal, brutal. Neighbor or not neighbor? Huh? Oh, we have a little disagreement here. Good, excellent. Neighbor or not neighbor? Right, right. Well, I mean, I suppose I got some of it right. But you can see why I don't like playing this game, right? Oh, you want this? Oh, we'll go on. I'll do them all. Okay, you like this. I thought you were going to hate this. I hate this. Neighbor or not neighbor? Okay, you like her as a picture? Okay, okay, okay. Neighbor or not neighbor? Okay, okay. Neighbor or not neighbor? Okay. All right. Well, so I think you picked about six. So you'd have to take six down, right? Right. It's not, you don't have to worry about that. Because, I mean, truthfully, well, I'm not going to take six down. and nobody gets hurt anyway, right? Because it's just photographs. Right, it's just photographs. But in the real world, people whom we don't see, I'm reading this now because I treated this text sort of like a journal because I couldn't figure out how to organize it, but some parts of it I have to read because if I screw it up, I'm just going to ruin everything. But in the real world, people whom we don't see, people who are not, for whatever reason, among the people we manage to be neighbors to. Notice I use the second question. People who are not, for whatever reason, among the people we manage to be neighbors to, they get hurt. Every day. The stakes are much higher than deciding whether a photograph is included in an exhibition. Someone gets evicted from an apartment. Someone loses their job. Someone loses a sister to cancer that they loved dearly. Parent loses his kid to opiate addiction. A mother cries herself to sleep because she knows her kid didn't get enough to eat. Someone commits suicide with their own gun. You know, I used to hate people who own guns, and then I read that more people die from suicide than homicide. Suicide with their own guns? I guess I have to consider them neighbors. Someone struggles with depression because they can't quite get the drugs right. Someone loses a spouse, not to death, a slow and inexorable dementia. Now, the nice thing, listen to me, the great thing about Jesus is that he never walks us out onto a limb and saws it off without getting on it himself, right? So he tells the parable of the Good Samaritan, and he arrives at a question that we all like, right? He arrives at the question of who among the three, right, was a neighbor to the man who's fallen upon by robbers, right? And honestly, we all like those odds better. They're still not great, but it's three, right? Down to three. So, and the lawyer, he answers it. And everybody gets on him because he doesn't say Samaritan. He says, the one who showed mercy, right? But here's the thing. I mean, I like that formulation. I like the lawyer, actually. You know, nobody in that room except for Jesus loves the Samaritans. Right. Nobody in that room except for Jesus doesn't hate the Samaritans, I should say, right? So he answers the one. And I'll show you why I like that answer. Can I borrow you, Carol? As a volunteer. Carol. Okay. I think you tape and I'll hold. Oh, that way, yeah. Okay. All right. I think that we'll try. You could be the one. You could be the one. You could be the one. Anybody here could be the one, right? So maybe that is why the first question is important. Maybe the answer to the second question is in fact the answer to the first. Because if Dave was right in his sermon when he said that when it comes to your life of faith and mine, the parable begins with us in the ditch. If he was right about that, if he's right when he said, when it comes to your life of faith and mine, the parable begins with us in the ditch, then we'd better hope, we had better pray that everyone is our neighbor. Thank you very much.
We have time? Thank you, Ned Walthall. We have time for questions. Do we have questions? Yes.
How do you make your photographs look like oil paintings?
Well, it's partly a technical question, but what happens is, the first thing that happens is you start with really, really, really good light, right? More light than you could possibly need. The light comes into Grand Central, it just blazes, blinds people, really. People are walking into it. You can see, they take their glasses off, they put their dark glasses on. So you need really, really great light. Then you need to use a technique called, your camera has inside of it a light meter. And that light meter tells the camera, or you if you're controlling the camera, how much light you need. And you can configure that light meter in various ways. You can configure it to look at the whole room, or you configure it to look at one spot that you're focusing on. If you configure it to look on one spot you're focusing on, then it says, I need enough light. Let me go back here. You can tell it, see if I can do it. I need just enough light to illuminate him, right? This spot. And it will give you, so then you set your camera up and you take your picture, and it will give you just enough light to do that. And everything else is going to be in shadow, right? Now, if you're shooting in color, that will look very much like a painting with chiaroscuro in it, right? And it doesn't always work. You know, you can't, but it works on days when the light is really, really, really bright. And, you know, and parts of the background in Grand Central are dark. So it's just a relative degree. This is just less light than this light. You know, that's what makes it happen. Sure.
Carol. How did you decide what? Which 26 pictures to put in there?
Oh.
Into the exhibition?
I was afraid you would ask that. Well, the first thing I do is I try to make sure that I have a kind of, for lack of a better term, I'm going to say demographic balance. So I don't want all men. I don't want all women. I don't want all white people. So I want there to be diversity, and I want there to be balance in the entire selection, because I know what you guys are thinking. You're thinking the message really is that everyone is your neighbor, and I guess it probably is. I'll let you off the hook for that. But if that's true, then you really want to make sure that as many people are represented there in the 26 as you can, because if they aren't, then you've left someone out, and that's bad. And if I've left someone out in there, it's not intentional. I keep that in mind when I shoot, you know, because I shoot a lot. I mean, when I'm shooting in Grand Central, I'll shoot maybe 2,500 exposures. And that's too many to count, but I'm thinking, am I getting everybody here, you know? Am I just getting a certain group of people, you know? I mean, it'll sort of balance out over time. So that's one thing. And then I wanted some people who I thought, I was using the Beatitudes for quotes, so I wanted some people who I thought were meek, and some people who were seeking peace, and some people who, you know, go down that list. I don't have it in front of me, but they're on the wall in there. I mean, so I want some of that. Some of them are from the pandemic period, and I definitely wanted some of that, because that was really hard emotionally to do, and I also think those photographs are really hard emotionally to deal with. I mean, that was a really hard time. And I remember going back after about a year after I'd been vaccinated, and I was completely overwhelmed when I did that. Yeah, sure.
Yes, Holly.
Ned, these are so beautiful. I'm just really enjoying looking at them. And one of the things that I notice is that no one looks happy. There's not much joy in these photos. And I'm wondering if some of that is a function of everybody's commuting or being in transit, or what your thoughts are about that.
Well, there's joy in the chaos. There's a lot of joy in the kiosk pictures. That's true. And when I shifted away from the kiosk, you know, I started to, that was one of the first things I noticed. That's probably to some extent bias on my part. I mean, I didn't include happy people. There are people that are happy there. There are people that are excited to be there. Some of them are tourists, of course. I think the working people, it's a really hard time. If you think of the period, a lot of the period in which I was photographing there, You know, Trump was president, and I'm not knocking Trump. It's just, that's not what this is about. But there are a lot of people in New York who are not happy when Trump was president. You know, it's not the kind of place where people are going to be really happy. You know, I mean, in that sense. And I think it's also true that, yeah, people work really hard in New York, and it's hard to commute. And I think the other thing is that there is a certain, people stay when they're in New York City, and I think this is true in most big cities, they stay in a kind of liminal state. They're kind of there and they're not there, because that's a way of being in a place where you're surrounded by, you know, 8 million strangers. So you're kind of like this, you know, and New Yorkers do that a lot. I mean, it's like they'll open up with their friends, and then the last thing might be that I'm photographing them. They might just be mad at me, you know, for taking their picture.
Great presentation, Ned. You talked about this a little bit, but maybe you could expand. How do you feel running around with a camera in Grand Central Station?
Not entirely good. I think street photography, I do it a lot, so let me be honest. Obviously, it gives me pleasure to do it. But otherwise, I couldn't make myself do it. But I think street photography is a socially aggressive act. It just is. You can't deny that. And when I go to New York City, I have to walk around Grand Central for about a half hour just to kind of ratchet myself up. I mean, I can't just walk in and shoot. I have to get emotionally in a state where I can do it, because it's rude and aggressive, you know, and I'm not typically rude and aggressive. So that's part of it. But I also think, for me, I constantly weigh these two things. Disrupting a person's day, sort of, you know, by taking their picture without their permission, and making art out of that. And I say to my, and I have to say, is there value in making this art? And I have to weigh that against whatever pain I've caused a person by taking their picture without their permission. And, you know, it goes like this all the time, right? I guess what I would also say in my defense is that if you look at the ceiling of Grand Central Terminal, there are about 15 cameras up there that are monitored 24/7 by the New York City Police Department. So everybody is being photographed, including me, right? Everybody's being watched, maybe most especially me. I'm sure, you know, somebody's saying, there's that photographer again, right? I mean, so I don't think, it's not something I always feel comfortable about doing, but it's a great question. Yeah.
Ned, are you often the only photographer?
Oh, God, no.
Okay.
Oh, no.
So there are others doing what you're doing.
There's a very, very, very long tradition of doing this kind of photography in Grand Central Terminal. And there are a lot of commercial photographers who will take wedding pictures there because they know that light. I've seen people propose in Grand Central. So, you know, and they're always, one time I was there and there was a guy, I think he was Japanese, he had a great camera, and he was just following me around. And he was just photographing me. And another time where I was there and there were these people they were commercial photographers doing this shoot for something, and they were from W Magazine, and they asked me if I would be willing to appear in an ad for a Rolex watch. And I said, sure. And so they gave me this Rolex watch. They made me sign a release. They gave me this Rolex watch. And they went around, while I was taking pictures, they went around taking pictures of me with a Rolex watch on my arm, right? And I asked them if I could keep the watch, but they said no. But I think, yeah, right. But I mean, there are a lot of photographers there.
Two comments and a question, Ned.
Yeah.
First comment. One of your quotes over there is, before I build a wall, I want to know who I'm giving offense to. From Mending Wall by Robert Frost. The fact that there's a mask, a COVID mask on, indicates to me that yet when you wear a mask like that, during COVID, were we walling people out? And in fact, why are people unhappy? Well, maybe it's during COVID also. That's the first comment.
Sure.
Second comment. The boy and his mother, why is he in a suit at 9 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah.
She's asking the question, how do I get to Juilliard? My son has an audition.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. That's what I thought.
And the third is a question.
That's my vote.
At any time did these people know that you were taking their picture, even after you took it?
Yeah. A lot of times they ask. A lot of times they ask me to delete. People will come up to me and say, did you take my picture? I never lie. And I say, yeah. And they say, will you please delete it? And I delete it right away. I want to get to the, what was your first question about the Mending Wall? Oh, the mask. I want to get back to that real quick. I think masks are the wearing a mask was really important to this work as art. Because what happened was, and I did it before and after, what happened was that the question that confronted me was, well, where were they wearing masks before? Because when they wear a mask, you don't see their masks. The business about being unhappy, that's a mask, right? Some of them were really unhappy, but some of them are probably very happy when they get home, right? They're wearing a mask. So it was weird moving from that period where everybody was like suited up and going to work and wearing whatever mask they wear to live that life, and suddenly putting a mask on, which just makes that explicit. And the pictures really have a much different impact on me because of that. It isn't that I didn't miss their faces. I absolutely did miss their faces, but I'd see a lot more going on in their eyes, for example. And you'll see that in the work there if you look.
So, Ned, I have a reaction to this whole story here. I traveled a lot in my career, and so I spent a lot of time in airports.
Yeah.
And I used to just sit there taking very slow shutter speed pictures in my mind of the people who were passing through, were going about their business, and to entertain myself, making up stories about them.
Yeah.
And so I want you to speak to, you know, your experience in terms of the story behind the picture that's going on in your mind, perhaps?
Yeah, I think when the second phase, the post-kiosks phase, the stories sort of went away. And I got kind of trained to do that. I mean, I was getting a lot of feedback when I was in art school about this, about people like, in the postmodern world, people like things to be ambiguous. People don't like straight narratives. They like irony. And so I think the more abstract, quote unquote, these are not abstract works of art, but the more abstract the picture becomes in terms of its being extracted from the particular circumstances of the person's life and what they're doing and where they're going, because they're just in that dark, right? The more I did that, the more people liked the work, and probably through confirmation bias, the more I liked the work. But what I did find was when I'm shooting at the kiosk, and I still shoot at the kiosk. In fact, I'm going to go back to that. Let's see if I can find. It's one of my favorite pictures. Oh, I guess I don't have it there. Sorry. There it is. That picture with the kid. I mean, I love that picture. And you see all kinds of things, all kinds of stories being told, you know, at the kiosk, like the one I talked about that I couldn't quite figure out. You see a lot of tourists where the children, European tourists, where the children are doing all the talking at the kiosk because their English is better than the parents, right? And so they're doing all the communicating, and the parents are kind of hanging back, looking terrified, right? And these kids who are 12 or 13, they're like in charge. You know, they're like, hey, where's the, you know, when does the train, the 832 to Stamford leave, right? I mean, it's that kind of thing. And so those pictures really do have narratives, and I love them. I still take those pictures just kind of for fun. I mean, because it's just fun to see what's going on there.
One more question.
You might have answered this before, but what camera and lens or lenses do you use to shoot these?
I use a Nikon D850, and I use a 70 to 200 millimeter telephoto lens that has a maximum aperture of 2.8, and I shoot in aperture priority. With spot metering turned on, and sometimes I will use exposure bias, so I'll knock down the exposure, because even then, even using spot metering, it's too bright, and that's what I do. Sure.
Thank you, Ned Walthall.
Thank you.
Go to nedwalthall.com or next door to the beautiful and powerful art exhibit that will be here for the month of March. Next week, we will continue our exploration of the New Testament with the question, who is my neighbor? Professor Eric Barreto will join us. We hope you will join us as well. Thank you, everyone.
Okay, thank you. I got, oh, thank you. Good to know.
Make the drive home very difficult.
Yeah, right.
Turn this off your hot mic.
Yeah, thank you. Get that.